So we want to thank B'nai Israel for providing us with an interesting parsha this week. This was good to break up all of the construction which has been taking place. So just to be clear, because I finally decided that we can't give in to the archbishop and we should read this properly. The story of the Egel begins, at least the way it is in our Chumash, there is both a new section here, you know, visibly there's a new section, there is a stuma over here, and on top of that, it's a new aliyah, begins one pasuk before this. And the pasuk is, Vayitena Moshe kechalatolu deberito bahar Sinai, shnei luchot ha'idut luchot evin ktuvim be'etzpa elokim. That God gives Moshe, when he completes speaking to him by Har Sinai, he gives him the tablets of testimony, luchot, evin, of stone, written with the finger of God. So one reason why this is interesting, because what it makes it sound like, is that as far as Moshe and God are concerned, they're done. If we skip the section, which is, we're going to skip for a moment, source number one, and we go to right after that, go to Pasuk Zayin, Vayidaber Hashem Moshe lech reid, ki shichet amcha asher elitim eretz Yisrael. Go down, because these people have basically messed up. So my question is, so which one is it? Is it that God completed speaking to Moshe, or is it that he's in the middle, you know, maybe we bit the bullet over here, because maybe God was going to give him another 400 mitzvah, maybe they were supposed to get to around 1,000 or something, and he sent him down a little earlier. It's, so I'm just saying the way that the story is placed over here, right in the middle of the speaking of God to Moshe, is itself interesting. So I'm just making an observation. The way that I would read it is that God really had completed, but this actually, in a sense, I don't want to say makes it worse, but makes it more dramatic. Because we got a split screen, and the split screen is that God just finished really with Moshe. Now Moshe's packing up his things, and I don't know if he brought a chisel with him. I mean, it says written Betz Belokim. I don't know if he's got all of his material with him, and so on. Maybe he packed up all the food that he didn't get to eat while he was there. So I don't know exactly what's going on right now, but it is interesting that's what I'm saying, that this pasuk right before makes it more interesting. Because if basically they're finished, but nonetheless, and now let's start with source number one. And what we're going to try to do today is that we're going to try to understand the strategy of what takes place. And there's at least two different groups, and there are multiple words over here that we don't understand. And essentially we can ask, with the different protagonists, what's the end game? Which means, what are they trying to accomplish? And I'm not convinced that it's all that simple, and I'm certainly not convinced that all the commentaries agree, because they don't. So, Vayar ha'am ki boshesh Moshe laredet minahar. And the people see that Moshe has been delayed in coming down from the mountain. So I think I translated the word boshesh correctly. Rashi gives us a homiletic understanding of it. It is boshesh. He was supposed to come down at a particular hour. He's not there by the hour. I don't know, is Rashi telling us that all the Jews, that again, who do we blame this on? Apparently we blame it on all the Yekkas, because he's a minute late, okay, it's all over, what's going on over here, he must be dead. So that it's okay, we'll get to blame a lot of other people as we move on, but at least I think it's completely fair to start with the Yekkim, and that's really what emerges from Rashi's reading on it. Again, Rashi says, Boshesh ki tergumo lashon ichur. He was late. V'chein Boshesh. Okay, and he gives another example of this. Just one second. And he writes then, ki kishala Moshe lahar omulahem l'sof arba imyom aniba bitoch shesh sha'ot. That when Moshe went up, he told them, I'm coming down within 40 days, within 6 hours. Now, Moshe also, I guess, was a Yekka, and Moshe had probably, he probably had a very good watch to be able to, you know, this is when I'm coming down. And right there, we have to realize that there's a great assumption that just now took place. And Rashi sort of pulled us into this assumption. When it says that Moshe is delayed, there's actually two possibilities. One possibility is that when he went up, he knew when he was coming down, which means the invitation that he got was, please join me. I don't know, anybody here ever go to a wedding in England? Apparently it takes close to 40 days for it to be over. There's a morning, they have a reception in one place, and they have another reception later on, and you wear different clothing, and that apparently is quite important over here, and I don't know if there's another reception afterwards and so on. So Moshe, was he invited for 40 days? Was he invited? God said to him, come up, listen, your invitation is 40 days, 6 hours. By then, you turn into a pumpkin, and this is all over. So I'm just saying is that there's an assumption over here, which Rashi is making. The people see that Moshe is delayed. Does that mean that he knows how long that he's going? Does that mean that he told them how long that he's going to be there? And if he did tell them how long he's going to be there, did he say, I'll be away for 40 days? Or did he say, I'm coming back on this particular date? The other thing which I want you to keep in mind, which may be haunting, just in the background over here, one of the things that Chazal tell us about Matan Torah is that God had said that I'm going to give you the Torah, and according to the Gemara, we're supposed to be on the second day, and then Moshe delays a day. He delays, and they need more time to get ready. Okay, and so now, this was according to the Yekim, so then Moshe probably was a chassid. What does it make a difference? So Sman Tefillah, so Sman Kriyat Shema, you can daven Shacharis, you know, right before Shkia, after Shkia, everything's okay. So God says on the second day, so we'll be ready on the third day. I know you never thought of Moshe as a chassid before. So Moshe essentially adds a day, and that's one of the things that we're told in the Gemara that Moshe does on his own, and God says, okay, this is very good. So therefore, Moshe's feeling is that we need more time to prepare. And again, this really is important, because when you read through the early Hasidic literature, when they trample upon certain halacha, namely Sof Zman Tefillah, one of the things is, yeah, but the Hasidim Rishonim is to prepare themselves to davening. I would assume that the Hasidim Rishonim got up very early when they prepared themselves for davening, and therefore they davened on time nonetheless, because it says that they prepared themselves an hour beforehand. It's not that you get up and have Shacharis on Shabbos at 10 o'clock because you need to prepare yourself. So again, you get up at dawn, or even before dawn, and maybe even you daven fatigue, and after you prepared yourself for an hour. So that's just an observation. But over here, when the Gemara says that Moshe, in terms of Matan Torah, says we're not quite ready, and he adds a day, and God approves of it. So now I'm just asking, what are, you know, we always come back to this, aside from Eden, we always come back to the unintended consequences. If Moshe added a day in the beginning, is that a reason why we may have a miscounting at the very end? Again, when was this told that he's going to go for 40 days, and what did he communicate to the people? And is Moshe coming down a day later a consequence of Moshe adding another day? Which means essentially, is God saying, sure, you can wait another day, but you only have 40 days. I mean, I'm busy. My schedule's full. I can't give you after that time. And of course, I'm exaggerating a little bit in case you don't realize. Then again, if you don't realize, I think most of you never would have come back after the first time. So, if he's late a day at the end, I'm just thinking out loud, so who are we here to blame? So when you don't know who to blame, who do you blame? You blame the rabbi. Who's the biggest rabbi? Moshe. So who do we blame? Let's blame Moshe for it. Correct? Correct. I always tell my students this. I said, when you get to the judgment day and God asks you, so what in the world went wrong over here? I say, blame me. Blame your rabbi. I say, it's your fault. You should have given me a better rabbi. Give me a better rabbi. I'd be okay now. Look what you gave me. So it's all on me. Okay, now you all have an excuse. That's good. Let's continue. Vayar ha'am kiboshesh Moshe laredit minahar. And the people see that he is delayed. Now, of course, there's the other possibility, which is they have no idea. They have no idea how long it's supposed to be. There was never a date which was given. There was never a time which was given. Again, don't be fooled by Rashi. Right? This is, we have to warn you. Don't be fooled by Rashi. Boshesh, 6 hours. So it's, no, boshesh means delay. Even Rashi said that. Rashi says it means that they were delayed, that Moshe's delayed. That's exactly what the Targum said. He's late. So therefore, a date was never given, a time was never given, but rather, a day goes by, another day goes by, another day goes by. How many days go by till you finally say, I don't think he's coming back. I think he got a better offer, right? Or the rational way to say this, how long could, he didn't have enough supplies. He's an elderly man. How long could he possibly have survived out there in the wild, up there on the hill, by himself in such a way? He hasn't come back yet because he's not coming back. Again, I'm just saying, let's completely take the time frame out of this, and therefore we don't blame Moshe, and it's not a question of a miscalculation. We don't even have to blame the Yekis right now, because it wasn't that he was a minute late, and therefore they said, okay, let's replace him and God and everything else along the way. But rather, since it's day after day after day after day, I could say that for 40 times, and then they say, no, this is enough. So I'm just saying, right there are going to be two different possibilities. Let's read that phrase one more time. Ha'am ki boshesh Moshe l'redit min ahar. And the word I didn't explain before was ha'am. So how do we want to translate ha'am? Ha'am, I guess, is the people. Now, some of us know the secret in all of this, and this is one of the great secrets in life, and that is that these are the people that are going to be blamed, are going to be the Erev Rav, and it's always important to have an Erev Rav around to blame. Because, again, if you don't have your rabbi, then let's blame the Erev Rav, okay? Unless your rabbi is the Erev Rav, right? So who is this Am, and do we have any reason to suspect that this Am is any other than our normal Am? So let's now read again. Vayaha Am ki boshesh Moshe l'redit min ahar. And the Am sees that Moshe is delayed in coming down from the mountain. Vayikahel ha'am al ha'aron. And the Am, again, the Am come and they gather on Aaron. Now, that sounds to me like a strong language. Right. The connotation over here is that you have a riot on your hands, right? You have a mob of Yekim right now, all pointing at their watches, okay? You know, someone's going to get upset with me after all. Some of my relatives. It's okay. V'yikahel ha'am al Aharon. So right there you have a connotation of violence or intimidation. Now, let's just say for a moment that these people see that Moshe hasn't come back. Why would I say such a thing? Because that's what we've said. That's what it says. They see Moshe hasn't come down. So what would the logical thing to do at this point? Based on everything we know till now, is there a logical thing to say? And the logical thing to say is, okay, we're stuck over here leaderless, and we need a new leader. And who would be the best person to be the new leader? And incidentally, there's a couple of different possible candidates, but the best candidate would seem to be, so it's interesting, do you go for the military leader, or do you go for the religious? No, that's very interesting. I guess this is a question in terms of upcoming elections as well. I just can't wait to hear what Gantz is going to say about Yair Lapid's military service. You want to send a tweet out right now and say that? Okay. He was working hard, sacrificing his life, writing articles in the newspaper while I was in the boats. Okay, anyway. I'm just amused. That's all I could say. Right. So let me continue. Who do you turn to? So when Moshe went up, he actually said that there are two people that I'm leaving in charge. One, of course, we never hear from again. So therefore the Gemara, of course, makes this as dastardly as we can, which Rashi will tell us as well, that, again, they go over to Hor, and they say, Hor, make us, you know, a god, and Hor says, oh, my dead body. They say, no problem, and we no longer have Hor, and therefore only Aaron is left. Now, if that, again, the Chumash doesn't tell us anything about this. The Gemara says it, right? There's a Gemara in Sanhedrin. The Gemara says it. Aaron sees what they did to Hor, and therefore Aaron thinks twice about it, know how to proceed. Now that's very good. That's a very good interpretation, because what did the Gemara just now do? It tries to show that Aaron is under incredible duress. He's under duress because look what these people just now did. Now, if you read the Psukim, do you see any duress over here? And the answer is yeah. The duress is there, not in the dramatic way that it was said by the Gemara, that they just murdered somebody, but rather, Vayikahel ha'am al aharon. But there's more. Because what should have happened next is they should have said, we're scared, we don't know what happened to Moshe, we're leaderless, but Moshe left a plan, and the plan had a succession to it, a succession plan. And the succession plan is, you're next. Aaron, okay, maybe you're very modest, and maybe you don't want to put yourself forward, please take over and take the reins over here and just tell us what to do. You know, how long do we wait? When do we... again, realize this whole thing about Sinai has been a detour. They're supposed to go someplace. They're on the way to Israel. Do we wait here indefinitely? How long do you wait? So therefore, the question should have been, do we continue our path right now or not? Can you? Somebody needs to make decisions over here. We can't just, you know, wait with this indecision. So they should have come to Aaron and asked him what to do. By asking him what to do, they would have been, at that moment, anointing him as the new leader by virtue of asking him what to do. Right? Is that fairly simple? But instead, and this is the problem, and again, this is the pressure that we see. They gather on him and they say, "Kum asay," and I don't care what comes next right now. What comes next is really what we tend to focus on. Oh, look what they did. But before we get to what they did, they're not accepting Aaron's leadership right now. They're telling him what to do. They're creating a new type of leadership. And what's this new type of leadership? You do what we tell you to do. Right there is the problem over here. And you go back to this pressure that Aaron is feeling. Why is Aaron going to feel pressure? Because they're all gathering on top of him. Again, they could be nervous, but they're all gathering on top of him. So when I say that Aaron feels pressure, and the Gemara says because Hor was murdered, I'm saying just look at the words. Vayakel ha'am al Aharon. Get up and do this. So what kind of accepting leadership is this? Which means Aaron is already, at this point, in a very difficult, I don't want to say impossible position, but at this point, he's in a very difficult position. Why? Because they've told him what to do. And by telling them what to do, he's therefore, by definition, not going to be the real leader. This really, in a sense, is what's going to disqualify him as leader, by listening to them, rather by standing up to them and telling them what to do. You know? No, this is what it is. If I'm the leader, this is what it is. But that's also what's very interesting. He never really seems to turn into the leader over here. Now, the next part of it is what we'll normally focus on. But I also want to read this carefully, because as you see, this is a very nice and very rich, long verse. Kum ase lanu Elohim. Make for us, and now the question is, how do we translate that next word? Or do you translate it with a capital or not with a capital? Do you put a dash in between or you don't put a dash in between? So over here, I'll read it as, make for us a God, asher yelchu lefanenu, who will go in front of us. Now that's very interesting. Asher yelchu lefanenu, of all things that I could have said that we need a leader for, it seems to be that I'm right in what I said before, as shocking as that may be, because what did I focus on that maybe you weren't thinking about before? Traveling. We need to go. We need to move, which means they're already thinking about traveling, going to the next place. So we need we need something to lead us along the way. And their intuition is, come, asei lanu Elohim, make for us a God. Now, the other thing, very good, make for us gods, if you wish, asher yelchu lefanenu. Now, the one thing that I do want to be careful about is to the extent that we are going to read their either request or instruction to Aaron based upon his response, yes? Or can we possibly read it independently of his response? But first, let's read it through, assuming that what he does is what they asked for. Ki ze Moshe ha'ish asher lanu me'eretz Mitzrayim, because Moshe, the man who took us out of Egypt, the man who took us out of Egypt, Lo yadanu mehayalo. We don't know what happened to him. So there seems to be a confusion over here. I don't want to say confusion. There seems to be a deliberate statement. So the way my father translated the word ha'ish, it's expressing Moshe's mortality. He's a person. People are very fickle. People are here today and gone tomorrow. And Moshe, apparently, is just a person. He's not here. So therefore, let's replace Moshe with a god, a concrete god or gods, and therefore we will be better off. But it's very interesting what we just now did, is that we just now translated it based upon what's going to come next. So I just want to pause there, because this was not necessarily the only way to translate it. But they also did something which we need to understand, but I just want to finish the verse, then I'll come back to it, because Moshe, the man who took us out of Egypt, lo yadanu mehayalo, we don't know what happened to him. Now, aside from making an assumption that they knew when Moshe was supposed to come down, which, by the way, links the beginning of the verse and the end of the verse, lo yadanu, we don't know what happened. So we don't know what happened seems to imply that they think that they should have known what happened. There's a long introduction in the Zohar, which is on page Aleph Amid Bet, which focuses on the Adanu. That's the main thing of where the sin has taken place over here. Right, there's no question. But Lo Yadanu makes the assumption that we have the right to know, which means there's a freedom.
We expect it.
Right, we have a Freedom of Information Act, and we have the right to know. This is our right.
The point that we expect it.
Correct. I'm saying Lo Yadanu goes back to the first phrase. The people see Moshe is delayed in coming down, and then they say, we don't know what happened to him, which means that we assume that we should understand everything which is happening to him. The question, and this I raised in my first book in explanations, to what extent is this going to be connected all the way back to the Eitz HaDaat, where people think they have a right to dat? Right? In today's generation, people think they have the right to know everything. I mean, but you have to realize that sometimes acquiring information means taking a bite from the forbidden fruit. And isn't it interesting, you have a whole company, Apple, which has, that's their symbol, is taking a bite from the forbidden fruit, because we have the right to know everything. You take that right, you take that bite, you think I'm reading into this too much, don't you? But I'm not. That you have a right to take, because you have that right to knowledge, and we're going to open up the world to you over here, but one has to realize it's still a tree of knowledge of good and evil, and when you take a bite from it, it's going to bring death into the world, which does not sound wonderful. But over here, we have this right to know, and I'll say it again, that's what the Zohar focuses on, is ultimately going to be the core of the problem, their feeling that they had this right to know everything. And maybe if they didn't feel that way, if they wouldn't have the lo yadanu mehayalo at the end of the verse, maybe they never would have had the expectations at the beginning of the verse and say, look, Moshe's delayed. Instead of saying, we don't know what's going on, Aaron, please tell us what to do. So therefore, it's really the end of the verse which colors the beginning of the verse, but I did skip something which I think is quite important. And that is, they said, again, Moshe ha'ish, Moshe the man who took us out of Egypt, we don't know what happened to him. Is there any problem in making that statement? Moshe, the one who took us out of Egypt. Because he's not the one who took us out of Egypt. Well, that's interesting, because the Haggadah seems to be responding to this a little bit. I mean, Moshe was involved in the Pesach story, correct? The Haggadah is a little extreme, isn't it? Let's write Moshe out. Yes?
No?
How... Can you realize this was like a bet of two rabbis? One rabbi says, I bet you can't tell the Pesach story without mentioning Moshe's name. And another says, yeah, I can. Watch this. I mean, how in the world do you talk about leaving Egypt and not mention Moshe? I mean, you realize then that there's a really strong ideological basis, maybe theological basis to this. And you have to ask yourself, well, why would there be such sensitivity? And then you read this verse and you say, oh, I know there'd be such sensitivity. Although it's true, the verse that they quote, that Moshe was the God himself took him out. That is a verse which is connected to Makat Bechorot. So ultimately, it was the 10th plague that God did by himself. Aaron didn't do anything. Moshe didn't do anything. God did it himself. And it was that 10th plague which actually caused Paro to capitulate, and that's what set them free. So it's true. The Jews left Egypt because of the 10th plague, which was only done by God. That's true, but I'll say it again. If you really want to tell over the story of leaving Egypt, Moshe may have been involved in this. But there's something else over here which bothers me about this. You're right. I just want to make it stronger. Okay, but there's something else which bothers me about this. And what's that? You know when you don't know the answer, and Sylvia's doing it. You know when you don't know the answer, you just go and look down to the next source, because it may very well provide the answer. So what is it that bothers me about this? Because we had a thing not that long ago, which was called the Ten Commandments. And in those Ten Commandments, one of the top ten... I told my students yesterday that Bar Ilan is one of the top five universities in Israel. I said, you know, why you want to go back to America? Most of you not even go to a top 100 school. Why you want to go? You can be top 10, top five. Then I told them only six in Israel, but still one of the top five. It's pretty good. So, Anochi Hashem Elokecha Asher Hotzeiticha Me'eretz Mitzrayim. So when God introduces himself and says, hi, I'd like to meet you, I'd like to let you know who I am. So God says, I am God who took you out of Egypt. By the way, he didn't have to start that way. And this is very interesting, how you start a relationship. When you put out your hand and you say, hi, nice to meet you, I am. So to give me advice, as a rabbi, should I always say, I am Rabbi so-and-so, or should I give my first name? What's the, what should I do? What?
What country?
I don't know, you just tell me what I should, I always say rabbi or not? So some say yes.
Yeah, no.
Why? Because it'll cause hatred and... That's formal. But it defines the relationship. Listen, if I don't do it, then sometimes afterwards somebody can say, oh, you know, I didn't know you, meaning, and they'll feel awkward afterwards. But it's very interesting how you set up a relationship, how you introduce yourself. God had other hats, right? God could have said other things. Hi, I'm God. I did that earthquake last week, right? Be careful, right? I'm a rabbi doctor. I could say it also. It's just, I could say anything. It's just not. But even there, it still goes back to creation. It still goes back. It doesn't go back to creation. Only by Shabbos it speaks about creation. But over here, when God introduces himself as the opening statement. Okay, let me say something as a parenthetical remark. Today is the yahrzeit of my great-grandfather. It was not on Shushan Purim. It was the day after Shushan Purim, and I have the gravestone to prove it. Okay, so my great-grandfather, my father's grandfather, he was a rabbi in Rimonov, and later on he was a rabbi in the Lower East Side, and his name was Rav Yor Shemitis, or Chamudot. So he gave a lecture on this week's parasha 101 years ago. How's that? In 1918, he gave, and this is what he said. When God introduces himself and says, I am God who took you out of the land of Egypt, a number of the Rishonim note that God could have said, I'm the God who created heaven and earth, but he chooses this. Now, what's the difference? So Rav Yair quoted the following Chazal. He said that when Moshe heard this, he said, made a bracha. He said, Baruch atah Hashem lekim echalom shelo asani goy. The blessed is God who didn't make me into a non-Jew. So what's the simple reading of this Chazal, of this teaching? That at the moment that God said Anochi, a transformation at that moment took place. We became Jewish people at that point, which means, how do you become a Jew? You accept the mitzvah. They heard that first mitzvah coming from God directly, accepted the mitzvah, and at that moment, we got imbued with Kedusha Yisrael. We became Jews at that moment, and therefore, what's the first thing you do when you become a Jew? So the first thing that you do is you say, you make a bracha. Bracha to Hashem, shelo asani goy. That was Moshe's response, and that would be the pshat. Okay? He read it slightly differently. He read it as follows. That when God says, introduces himself, and says, I'm the God who took you out of Egypt, there's a real big difference between Egypt versus creation. Because essentially creation is something which is on God's terms. Yes, it's important for us, but it's really much more on God's terms. But when God says, I'm the one who took you out of Egypt, there's a whole lot which is right there acknowledged between the lines. For example, I know that you were slaves. I know that you're all suffering from post-traumatic stress. I know that there are scars. I know that there's emotional scars. I know that there's physical scars. And at that moment, when God starts the relationship and says, I'm God who took you out of Egypt, Moshe said he understands where we're coming from. And better than that, when they mess up, I'm going to have an excuse. And I'm going to say, well, what do you want from them? They were slaves. They took them out. You know that. That's what you acknowledged. So therefore, he said, what happens when the Jews do sin? And God says to Moshe, I'm going to make a great nation out of you. I'm going to make you into a goy gadol. I'm going to make you into a great nation. So Moshe says, wipe me out of the book. But how can Moshe do this? Because he understood that God started the relationship by saying that I'm God who took you out of Egypt. So therefore, what was the bracha that he said? Shelo asani goy. Not that you didn't make me into a non-Jew, that you didn't make me into a nation. Shelo asani goy, because he realizes right now he's going to have the excuse to defend the Jewish people afterwards. Shelo, at that moment, if God is setting up the relationship on this subjective understanding, again, we'll put it this way, where God is expressing the what we would call today emotional intelligence and compassion and feeling, that knowing where we're coming from, Moshe right there knows already he's got the opening to defend us. And he says, Baruch Shalom Asani Goy. Thank God I didn't become a nation. Not I didn't become a nation because he knows right then he'll defend them with the Chet HaEgel. So that's what That's the way he understood this parsha. But over here, by saying it's Moshe who took us out, you know, if this were in other contexts, you know, Moshe, you did, but it's when Moshe's not here and saying what Moshe actually did for us, and being that they, not that long ago, heard or saw or understood that it's God who said, I took you out. So that's the first thing we have to note. What are they saying? And more importantly, what is the end game that they want to get to? Which means something happened with this, and now let's continue. Vayomer lehem Aharon. Aharon's response is, Perku nizmea zahav asher bozne nesheichem b'neichem v'notechem v'viyo elai. And Aharon says, remove the gold from your wives' ears, your sons and your daughters, and bring it to me. So if I didn't know any better, I would suspect that this is a tactic in terms of delay. Because I can just imagine those guys walking home into the tents and say, dear, remember that earring that I gave you? I'd like it back. And she said, what? Are you kidding me? Did you find some like funky mushroom tasting mun out there over there? Like, what's the matter with you? Just go away. It's interesting. Again, and in my mind, there's no doubt that this is the first of four delays that Aharon is going to do, because he thinks that Moshe either should or would or will be coming soon. And therefore, he says, bring me the gold. Now, I'm going to ask again, does Aharon have an end game to this? Which means, is this just a delay? And therefore, he figures that a couple of beat up men, right, full of bruises, what happened? I fell, right, are going to be coming back afterwards. Or is Aharon's end game really, I'd really love to make for them a golden calf, because I think that would be very, very meaningful. So I'm saying, over here, Aharon seems to have a delay. But what happens? Vayidperku kol ha'am. So this already, is this the third time that we have ha'am over here? It doesn't say actually, and here there's again one of two ways of reading this. Is kol ha'am saying that the women and the children said, oh, absolutely, and they gave their gold? Or is this that the men themselves gave all of the gold? Which means, did they listen to what Aharon said, and therefore they were successful? Because you want to defend the women and say the women weren't involved in this. So you have a sexist reading of the Chumash, which many of Chazal do. But again, just my question is, what does the word actually say over here? Or what did the word say? Vidperku kol ha'am. So what does it mean over here that everybody was involved? So is it everybody, or is it just the men themselves? Basically, we're not going there. We're not asking our wives. We're not asking our children. And everyone got whatever gold reserves they had. So therefore, did they listen to Aharon or not? Or maybe put it a little differently, did this delay tactic work as well as Aharon would have perhaps wished that it had worked? V'yaviu el Aharon, they brought it to Aharon. V'yikach mi'adam, and he takes it from their hands. V'yatsar oto b'cheret, v'yasehu egel masicha. So this, as far as I'm concerned, is the second delay, which you're going to perhaps say to me, what an unfortunate delay this was. But what he does first is he melts it down. So the melting down process is going to take some time also. So by melting it down, he is also, again, biding time. But then it says that he does make this into an egel, and it certainly sounds like it's Aharon who does that. Vayomru, and they say, Eila Elohecha Yisrael Asher Luchem Eretz Yisrael. And they say, here is your God Israel who took you out of Egypt. Now, here's actually where we have our problem. Which means, now when I go backward and I think about what was said before, Moshe the man took us out of Egypt. I mean, how can a rational person come and say, Five minutes ago, oh, that was Moshe who took you out, and now make something and say, this is what took us out. See, before, it should have been that God took us out. And that's what I'm trying to point out over here. By taking God out of the picture, yes? By taking, maybe I'll put this a little differently. By the time we get to the next pasuk or so, the next two pasukim, how many of the Ten Commandments will they have broken? which is not bad. This is a productive day. I mean, if you include, okay, I think by the time you're going to get over here, don't make a graven image and then don't serve it. You're going to have murder of Hur, perhaps, if you want to read that into it. If you want, you have the Gilei Arayot afterwards over there, according to Rashi, Kumul Latzachek. So you essentially have at least five, maybe six. That's not bad. That's not bad for a day. If it would have been Shabbos, maybe you could work at it with Shabbos also. But I'm just saying, that's not a bad day. This is pretty productive, you know, in terms of sinners. This is pretty good. But my point is this is what they have. They have the Ten Commandments. So therefore, maybe it sounded a little subtle. Maybe it was okay at the time when they said, oh, Moshe is the one who took us out. But by saying it's Moshe and not God, right there in that sentence, I think there was a setup there already. Because you're not going to jump straight from God to this thing that they made. But they had a very clever starting point. They ignored God, gave Moshe the credit, but it can't be Moshe because, look, Moshe's not here, so therefore it's something else. And what is it, what they claim that they wanted? It's very interesting. Make for us a God who's going to go before us, which is future-oriented. And now they make something and they say, oh, look what it did for us going backwards, which is also, I mean, if you'll ask me, it's irrational, but I was never that good in idolatry, so I don't know exactly what it is that they're thinking. But again, the shift that has taken place over here between we need something from now moving forward who's going to lead us in our path, now in retrospect they're saying, oh, look at this thing that took us out and giving it all of the credit. But again, they say, now for those of you who like the era of Rav to blame, here's the easiest place to read it in. Vayomru, Elu Elohecha Yisrael. Because there was no reason to say the word Yisrael in this pasuk. They could have said Elu Elohecha. This is the God that took you out. But instead they say Elohecha Yisrael. So that's what would get us back to the point of saying the heir of Rav over here are trying to sell a belief to the others. Right. So I'm saying this is where the Eruv Rav comes into it, because there's somebody speaking to the Jews and saying this. Vayar Aharon, Aharon sees, you know, where all this is going. Vayivan Mizbeach Lefanav, and he builds a Mizbeach. That's delay number three. Now again, you can say that's a really unfortunate delay, because that's going to lead us to serving this other god, but I'll say it again. Everything that Aharon has done till now has been a delay tactic, but he's obviously playing with something which is quite dangerous, because we know where this is going to end up, but Aaron has done something else which ultimately is going to take time. And then he finally gets the best delay of time when he says, Vayikra Aaron Vayomar, Chag LaHashem Machar. Okay, I'm declaring a holiday tomorrow, which means it's not today. And the other thing that he says, which hopefully none of us missed, is that till now we've been talking about an Elohim and making a God in capital, small, with a dash, no. Over here, he leaves no doubt. It's going to be a holiday for Yud, Kei, Vav, Kei, which Aaron is still the monotheist, saying that there will be a holiday for God tomorrow. V'yeshkimi m'macharat, now instead of sleeping late, that we would like and expect people to do, rather they channel their inner Avraham, or Bilam. Vayaleo olot, and they offer burnt offerings. Vayagishu shlamim, and they offer peace offerings. Vayeshev ha'am le'echol, the people sit to eat. Vishatu, and they drink. Vakamu letzachek, and they make merry. So something obviously got completely out of control. And the question, again, over is, I think in really broad strokes, I've tried to show what their thinking is and what Aaron's thinking is and how they're leading him in a particular way, and especially going to the end. But the question is, was there really a well-thought-out plan on either side? Which means, is Aaron really... I don't want to say Aaron's not thinking, because I think he has one major thought, and his major thought is delay. And let me do whatever I can to delay, and sometimes the best thing he can do to delay is play into what he believes it is that they're requesting. And they, okay, we'll build a Mizbeach. Okay, you want to do this, let's do this right, let's build a Mizbeach, and that becomes, that they're going to buy into that. I think it was easier for him to sell them on the Mizbeach than it's going to be to sell them on the, let's wait for tomorrow. But still, Aria said, listen, we need to prepare, which also goes back, you know, you need to prepare to get involved, let's do this tomorrow, which is also going back to Moshe's preparation before we can get to Har Sinai. And now you realize that it could be that Moshe's preparation for Sinai is actually what gives Aaron the idea that we need to prepare for this particular day. But also at Sinai, there was a Mizbeach which was built, and that Mizbeach, we had offerings that were done. So over here, Aaron seems to be going back to that, what happens by Sinai in terms of what it is that we can do over here. But I'll say it again. To what extent Aaron has a clear strategy as opposed to tactics, which means where does he want to bring them to? He just wants to delay. So therefore, it's a series of delay tactics, which leads to ultimately something which is quite difficult and quite troubling. On the other hand, what is it that they were thinking of? Now, if we pause for a moment, this connection with the Ten Commandments, which I think is really clear, maybe it's too clear, maybe it's too simple, that they trample upon one after the other from the moment that they talk about Moshe took us out of Egypt to don't make any graven images and don't serve them. I mean, it's one after another, they're breaking the Ten Commandments. Again, whore, that's icing on the cake if we throw in the murder as well. But a surprisingly small amount of commentaries actually make this kind of a connection. So I went searching. The only one that I saw talk about it is the Al-Sheikh, which is in Source 15. We're not going to look at it right now, but I'm just telling you that's one of the things that he deals with. A number of the commentaries are troubled by what happened. When I say they're troubled by what happened, well, of course they're troubled by what happened. How do you have people that served, that experienced Har Sinai a short time ago, and now suddenly they are building and worshiping a golden calf? So that seems to be a really difficult occurrence, which how does this follow that? So you have a number of commentaries who like to ask questions. The Al-Sheikh is one of them. Over here I also have the Toldot Yitzchak. This is an uncle of Yosef Karo, of Yitzchak Karo, also asks a series of questions. I mean, this is also the same approach that you would find in the Abra Brunel and others. Again, question after question, how in the world did this happen? And I think that all of those questions are generally going to be based upon one assumption, and that assumption is, on both sides, that there's a plan. Which means there's a plan. How do I get to point number D? So therefore, I work backwards and say, okay, now I have A, B, and C, which was leading me over there. And I'm just questioning whether that is really a correct assumption. Which means, do they know exactly where they're going to? When these people come and they again cause Aaron this feeling, really, I don't want to say of helplessness, or they put this pressure on him and they tell him what to do. Did Aaron at that moment really feel that he had a choice, or he has to do something? And I'll say it again, did he hear them right? So now, there are those who are going to try to defend Aaron and the Jewish people. And they'll claim along the way that there was not really a sin in terms of Avodah Zarah that took place. Now, hopefully you all realize that's not an easy argument to make for multiple reasons. One reason, let me just pause for a second, and I want you to see something in the Rashbam. The Rashbam writes, "Asher yelchu lefaneinu," in source number 3, you know, they wanted something that's going to go in front of them, "ke'in trafim ha'asuyim b'machshefot shiagidu tzarchehim." They wanted an oracle that will tell them what to do. So it's very interesting then, because they seem, I just want to show you how interesting this statement is. They seem to intuit that yes, Moshe is a man, but Moshe is also the greatest Navi that we ever had, and Moshe is the one that God has been speaking to. So therefore, Moshe has been an oracle. Moshe has been the one who tells us, who knows exactly what we're doing. We need an oracle that's going to tell us what to do. What the Rashbam just now did, again, at face value, what he just now did is he's clearly answering a basic question, and that is, were they trying to replace Moshe, or were they trying to replace God? So it could be that we have contradictory information, that in the very beginning when they say Moshe, the man who took us out of Egypt, is not here, so we need to replace him. Afterwards, when they point out and say, Elo Elohecha, this is what took you out, and again, that comes this question, do they see that as being a replacement still for Moshe or for God? But he's just taking this in. What is the logic of making something to replace Moshe Well, that's if you realize that Moshe really was for them an oracle telling them what to do. Just in terms of the Rashbam's inner logic on this, in source number 4, which is in Perek Kaf Chet, when he spoke about the Urim V'Tumim, he says, what is the Urim V'Tumim? He said, it's an oracle. It's something which tells us what it is. Ke'en hashva'ot hashemot bidvar akdusha, she'enot ten b'choshen lagid mishpatam v'tzokehem. The Urim V'Tumim is that you would use all kinds of names of God and you would get out of this a response telling you what the answers they needed. Im ha'umot magidim lahem trafim uksamim shalahem beruach tuma lahavdil kama havdalot bein tuma latara kal v'chom eluktushat shemagedet. That just like there is a phenomenon known as the trafim that the non-Jews use as oracles, which tells them the future, and it really sounds like he's buying into this, which is quite interesting. He says lahavdil, but he says there is such a thing as koach hatuma. There are forces in the world that do communicate in such a way. But just to point out that he's actually consistent, back in source number 5 in Bereshit, the Rashbam says, "Vatiganov Rachel et ha'trafim shelo yagidu v'yodiu l'Lavan ki ratza Yaakov l'vroach." The reason she stole the trafim was that Lavan would have no idea where they ran away to, because she believed these trafim can actually go and speak and tell people. They certainly seem to be very good on traveling routes. I guess it was the first. I guess it was Waze. I really do. I think it was a GPS. I think that's what it was. Which way do we go? Okay, you go over here. So it's really interesting what we just now did with these sources. We've said, yeah, we need to replace Moshe. Moshe's the one who took us out. Now, do you realize how I'm reading that now? Moshe took us out. Not that Moshe was the one who removed us from bondage, from slavery. Does it say that? Does it say that or no? Helanu, maybe it's wrong. Read the Seret HaDibrot now. Me? Eretz Yisrael, me Beit Avadim. They could hear, if you, now Aaron could say, did you just say that Moshe took us out of not God? They say, what are you talking about? God is the one who took us out of the Beit Avadim, but Moshe is the one who showed us which way to go. How do we know which way to go now? So I just now defended our eagle makers, right? Or worshippers, and saying, you know, I just suggested earlier that they're going against the Seret HaDibrot. You know, if they had a good lawyer, paid him enough money, he would say, what are you talking about? They didn't go against the Seret HaDibrot. They say, Moshe is the one who showed us the way to come out, right? The path that we took, he was our GPS, he was our oracle, so we need a new oracle to help us. And just incidentally, this issue of our oracle or where we're going to go actually comes back to be a problem in source number 12 and 13, and that's when we actually leave. So when we leave, what is it that's going to guide us along the way? It's going to be the Ananim. And afterwards, and this is something I don't want to ignore, it's in source number 13, it's when Moshe talks to Chovav ben Reuel, and he tells him we're going, and you should stay for us, and you should be for us, you should be a guide, as it were, for us, and let's not make a mistake about this. His refusal to do this leads directly into finding other people who are going to go and search out the path which is the right way to go, which is actually going to be the Chet HaMeraglim. So look what we just now did. We just now drew a direct line between what's going to end up being the Chet HaMeraglim, going back to the Chet HaEgel, going back to the same concern. How do we go? How are we going to travel? What's going to take place? Of course, with the Chet HaMeraglim, there's one other issue which more than anyone else is spelled out by the Netziv, and that is to what extent do we move from a supernatural existence to a natural existence? So from what extent can we no longer rely upon the cloud to tell us where to go or any other thing which is supernatural, and to what extent do we need our own? So Moshe asking a person to do this sounds very interesting, because it's actually the opposite. They have the, right before this, source 12 and 13 are one right after the other. This is the end of Perek Tet, if I'm not mistaken, and the other is the beginning of Perek. So it's not the beginning, the end of Perek Yud. It's one Perek after the other. How do they travel when the cloud lifts up and travels? And over here, how do they travel? So Moshe is turning to a person and saying, you know, please show us which way to go. So that's really interesting, because over here we have a person who's been telling us which way to go. And now, but the person is Moshe Rabbeinu, but now we need to make a thing, an oracle, that's going to tell us how to go. So I'm just showing that there may be more of a parallel over here than perhaps we have recognized. Going back to page number 1 and the Ibn Ezra. Now, this is one of the cases where the Ibn Ezra follows his relative. We don't know exactly how they're related, and that's with Yehuda Levi, the Kuzari, and they tend to say the same thing. Basically, a whitewash in terms of the Jewish people. There is no replacement of God over here. The eagle was not Avodah Zarah as such. Again, it just goes back to Moshe, which I already showed you. The Rashbam goes in that direction, because, again, what we need is an oracle. It's not a god. We need something that's going to lead us, although the Rashbam recognized that this is some kind of kochot hatum'ah. There's something unholy about this, but still, in absolute terms, I hesitate to say it's a replacement of God over here, although Avodah Zarah may not be a replacement of God. Serving something like this may not be a replacement of God, but let's hold on to this. Looking at the Ibn Ezra, V'yesha Omrim, Kintam Perku et Nizmei Zahav Asher Baznei Neshechem, Shadachautam, that it was a delay tactic. And then the Ibn Ezra rejects that. Ki Chashav Shanashim Lo Yitnu Lo Lahem Nizmeim. And he doesn't like this. He rejects that. So we love the Ibn Ezra when he does this, when he says, there's a secret, but I'm not going to tell you, but I'll give you a hint, and maybe you'll get it. And he loves to do this. Somebody should write a book just on the Ibn Ezra secrets. Right? The secrets of the Ibn Ezra. It will be a very good book. You don't want to write this? And he says, I've already explained to you, Kfar bi'arti lecha batatiye lo lelohim. What does that mean? Where is that? Batati elo lelohim. That's by Moshe. God says to Moshe, you will be for Paro, and it's Paro. You will be for an Elohim. What does the word Elohim mean in that sentence? So doesn't mean God, it doesn't mean judge, which means, is God saying to Moshe, you're going to be a God, or is he saying to him, it's judgment day. You're the one who is going to mete out justice to Paro. He's finally going to get what's coming to him. Now that's very interesting, because they only wanted someone who's going to, again, show them a place, the way to go. And Aaron built the Mizbeach when he built to serve God. Now he just now had a very interesting defense on Aaron. When Aaron says to build the Mizbeach, why does it say that he builds the Mizbeach? So he's reading the end of Pasuk Hay in source number 1 to qualify the beginning of it, which means after this thing is built, Vayar Aaron, Vayiven Mizbeach Lefanav, of course the problem is Lefanav, Vayikra Aaron Vayomer Chag Lashem Machar. Tomorrow is a holiday for God. So one second, that's really interesting. Ve'elu Olot Lashem, which means as far as the Ibn Ezra is concerned, the Mizbeach, the holiday, the offerings are all being done to God, not to the eagle. Which means, if you say, but Aaron worshipped the eagle over here, Ibn Ezra is going to say, what are you talking about? Just read the Psukim. And again, for him, the key is going to be Chag LaShem Achar. Therefore, the Mizbeach is LaShem, and therefore the Olot is LaShem, and the Shlamim LaShem. And everything over here is a holiday service worship of God, one God, capital G, Yudke Vavke. And that is the way that Ibn Ezra is reading it, which is an incredible defense of what took place. Now, the one thing that you'll say, but Aaron made the eagle, right? That was a distraction. Again, is there a clear plan beginning to end, or is what Aaron is doing over here a series of distractions in order to somehow delay? But he says, no way in the world can you say that Aaron actually worshipped idolatry, because he didn't. He built him his Mizbeach LaShem, Holiday LaShem, Olot LaHashem, Shlamim LaHashem. Of course, the problem is going to be, Rak Naaseh Shelo Kahogin, the Ibn Ezra continues, V'atam Belo Kedusha, but it didn't have the holiness because it wasn't something which God had told him to do. V'yab Yisrael Shechashav Shu Avodah Zarah, but there were some amongst who thought the whole thing was for Avodah Zarah. So Aaron's intentions are L'Shem Shemayim, while there were people there who weren't, which of course will be manifest when they point and they say, Elo Elo Hecha Yisrael. And then he goes on to say at the very end, V'mevin sod malchut shemayim yodea lamet surat egel, which of course what he's saying and he's hinting at, should we reveal his secrets or no? Of course what he's talking about is the Merkava, where one of the faces is the face of Ashur, and the leg is the leg of an egel. So therefore he wants to say that in terms of what they experienced, either at Ar Sinai or splitting the seas, they experienced the Merkava, and therefore that was what was in their mind, and that was why making the Egel was something which actually had some kind of a logic to it. Now, yeah. It may not be all that different, which may be precisely why Nadav and Avihu get such a severe punishment, because we've been there and done that, and this does not work out well. I will point out now that even if we think that the Ibn Ezra is a solitary voice, he's not. Because the Chizkuni in number 7 and the Balei HaTosfot in number Dat Zakenim in number 10, they all say the same kind of thing. And just the question is how much time we have and how much we're going to look at. I mean, the Chizkuni again. Kum maselenu Elohim lefi apshat chalil la Aaron she'asev odet kochavim she'akadosh Hashem v'navi liYisrael u'mitzvot rabot nua yado im Moshe achiv. He goes, you can't say that Aaron later becomes Kohen Gadol and he's worshipped the avodah zarah. V'im asav avodah zarah eich nimlat shelo hargu Moshe. How would he have escaped from being killed among those who worship the eagle? Ve'echo yachakach mechaper Yisrael, hu v'zaro atzof kol adarot. Ve'od lo matzina shizkira katuv alav shum avel. We never find the Torah saying anything that he did wrong. Rak avon me'er mirivah, only the sin of the me'er mirivah. I mean, I could respond to the Chizkuni if he really wanted me to. He then goes in and he questions whether Moshe ever told them when he's coming down or not, and they thought he was dead, and so on. And he goes back to this Moshe replacement. In source number 8, we'll do this very quickly, Moshe tells over in Sefer Devarim about the Cheta Egel, and he says that God wanted to wipe out the entire people, right? We like Pasuk Yudala that goes to the Dvar Torah I said before from my great-grandfather, when he says, Vescha otcha lagoy atzum, berav men, I'm going to make you into a great nation, and that's why he says, Shelo asani goy, but then God wanted to wipe them out. If you look at Pasuk Yud-Ted, Asher Kotzaf Hashem Aleim La-Shmid Etchem, God wanted to wipe you out. Ve'ishma Hashem Elai Gam B'Pamahi, and God listened to my prayers. Ve'uva Aaron hit Anaf Hashem Ma'od La-Hashmido, Ve'tpalel Gam B'Ad Aaron Be'etahi, and God wanted to wipe him out as well. So I don't know what the Chizkuni is talking about by saying that we never find that Aaron did anything wrong. Then why exactly does God want to kill him if he didn't do anything wrong? So as I said, I'll leave that as a question. Also, we have an interesting commentary by David HaMelech in Tehillim in source number 9. Yasu egel b'chori v'yishtachavu l'masecha. They made an egel and they worshipped a masecha, which means, again, he didn't say the Korah, v'yamira et kvodam b'tavnit shor ochel esev. Shachachu el moshi'am oseg delot mitzrayim. And they forgot God. You're going to have Rishonim who are going to twist this around a little bit. V'yomer lahashmidam lule moshe b'chiro amad b'feretz lefanav l'vshiv chamato miyashchit. Which means the David seems to be thinking, yeah, they worship this, they serve this, and so on. That was in source number 9. We'll end with the Balei HaTosfot in source number 10. Asu lanu Elohim, make for us. Can we read that pasuk again? The first, what is that? Source number 1. Vayar ha'am ki boshesh Moshe l'redit min ahar. What if the word Elohim over here meant judge? Can you read the whole pasuk again and now tell me what they want? Just in case you think I'm guilty of something terrible, look at the Datz Kain. Masei lanu Elohim, lo l'shem avodah zarah nitkavnu. They never wanted to do avodah zarah. Ki im liyot shofet. They were just asking for a shofet, a judge, to take the place of Moshe. Should I read that again? Read the first pasuk. Vayar am kiboshesh Moshe l'redim b'nahar. The people see Moshe delayed in coming. Vayakela alam Aaron, which again is not nice. Vayomay love, and they say, Koma say lanu Elohim, appoint a leader. Now you're going to say, but asay, what does asay mean? Appoint for us a leader. Appoint a judge. We don't know what happened to him. Which means, according to what he's saying, Aaron completely misread the situation. If Aaron would have said, okay, we'll get a new judge, a new person in charge, and then the whole thing is over. Now, is that a correct read on this or not? I can't tell you, but it's certainly a fascinating read. And I do love all of the Rishonim. And what you'll see if you look, it's most of the Balei HaTosfot, and they all come around the same point. They defend Am Yisrael. There never was a Avodah Zarah. It can't be that they did a Avodah Zarah. It just can't be that they did it. They never had in mind to worship such a thing. They built a Mizbeach and they worshiped God and Aaron worshiped God. There was never, it can't be that it was that bad. The only question is if David HaMelech reads it like this, or you can say that a people on that level who experienced Har Sinai, the expectations are much higher. If you're going to say that everything that I've done today is apologetics, okay, I don't mind being guilty. But I'm just saying the reading over here is really not a terrible reading. Quite the opposite. It's really quite interesting. And that's why I say, again, was there a concrete plan from the people who complained? Was there a complete plan of Aaron? Or is this one of these situations that neither side has a plan, and you basically have action, response, 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 and something terribly got out of control, and it was never supposed to go that way from the beginning, and had they simply said, okay, we'll anoint a new person who's going to be the one, who's going to be the leader and tell us what we do next, then the whole thing would have ended without an eagle ever having been built, and therefore the bad thing, see, the good thing I did is just defended Am Yisrael. The really bad thing that I just did is I sort of put all the blame by Aaron by saying that Aaron misunderstood and misread the situation, but I'll say it again, Aaron has a tactic, and his tactic is a delay tactic, and now you'll say, but it's really unfortunate we did as a delay tactic, but that does not indicate what his end game was, because what was his end game? His end game, of course, is to serve God, as the psukim actually say. So what I try to do today is to read, maybe for some of you, to reread the story of the eagle, but at the end, maybe we could defend Aaron, we could defend Am Yisrael, we could defend everybody, and just turn to God and say, hold it. So why you get so upset? Nobody did everything wrong over here. So I said, so then God, then the question becomes on God.
Does anybody talk about the fact that God could have stopped this by